If the Mexican Grand Prix taught us anything, it's that make sure you find someone in life that makes you as happy as Checo does for his dad. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Seriously, the most wholesome man in the world. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 331 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and welcome to the Mexican Grand Prix episode. And yeah, this was a... Well, we're not going to beat around the bush here. This one was... it was a race. It existed. It happened. And no, RJ, stay awake. Stay with me here. Thank you. It happened, it existed, and we got a seal club in. And unfortunately, it wasn't the most entertaining one in the world, but certainly a newsworthy one. And we'll get into all of that in the next half an hour, 45 minutes or so. And we got a little bit of MotoGP to get to as well. But more for a different sort of reason than you'd expect. We'll get to that later, I promise. But let's go around the horn real quick. First of all, Mr. Bing Bong himself, Mr. Ryan Eric King. Hello, sir.
Since the last time we were here, my New York Knicks took down the reigning, defending NBA champs, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Knicks are here, baby! The Knicks are fucking here, baby!
You're all saying it wrong. How are the Knicks?
Oh, man.
Somebody will sell Michael Andretti. Don't you regret not signing King Kirkwood? Don't you regret not signing King Kirkwood? It's now official. AJ Foyt Racing has Kyle Kirkwood. This is the best prospect you're going to get. Larry Foyt, if you have any aspirations of doing anything as a team principal other than keeping your grandfather's name in the sport, now's a good time to start showing it.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't agree more. That was RJ O'Connell. He's absolutely spot on. Yes, in the time since we recorded our bonus episode on Kyle Kirkwood, which you can check out exclusively on YouTube if you haven't already, youtube.com/motorsport101 if you're not listening to us on YouTube or any other else where you can get your platforms? Your podcasts on any other platforms, I should say. You can check that out if you haven't already. It was a great hour and a quarter on, shall we say, mismanagement of one of the brightest IndyCar prospects we've seen in quite some time. But yes, since then, it was confirmed yesterday he is going to AJ Foyt Racing. It's a seat. It's something. Yay.
Something.
It's a one-year deal. And that's the best possible thing for Kyle Kirkwood. Because you don't want to get stuck there if they're not serious about building a contender. Like, for all that shit that we talked about Matt Chilton not being serious about his job, I haven't seen AJ Foyt want to win anything about 8 years.
The bar is lower than the Nintendo Virtual Boy's sales.
Bar is lower than the GTA Remaster's quality control.
Yeah, subterranean, to say the least on that one. Speaking of which, Cam Buckley, how you doing, sir? He was listed as questionable for this podcast after suffering a mild bout of sinus infection. But he is here. He soldiered on. How you doing, Buckley? How you doing, big man?
Hello, listeners. Hello from the medical bay. I've not had a pleasant week.
Mm-hmm.
I think morale in my camp is about as high as it is for Valtteri Bottas's camp right now. It's not going too good, but I'm here.
You're here for four more races. He's going to stick it out for the last four races. And I was like, after this, my first thought was, oh my god, there's still four races left. And then my second thought was, oh my god, there's still four races left. They're in the middle of November. It's just like, we have four races in 5 weeks to close out the year. Oh, good lord.
We'll have digested like 10 different cycles of Kyle Larson champion discourse by the time this season ends.
Oh, god. You know, despite a championship format that could barely be described as a championship, designed specifically to screw people like Kyle Larson out of championships, we just couldn't beat this guy. We can't beat this guy. We're banging our heads against the wall.
Hendrick Motorsport is a good organization, and people need to stop running PR for a guy who's You don't get any, they're not going to pay you for running PR. You know what I mean? They're not going to run PR for you thinking this is a better comeback than Ernie Irvin coming back from near fatal head injuries to win multiple races, or Tim Richmond coming back to win back-to-back races with a disease that would go on to eventually ostracize him from the sport and then take his life. It's not that great of a comeback. Kyle Larson did it to himself.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's not that much of a comeback because, you know, he's already a really good driver who just happened to get an upgrade to the best team in the field.
Good for him! You know, good for him. Like I said on Twitter, sarcastically, and I'll echo my same tweet here, congrats to the number 5 pit crew for winning the Sprint Cup title. I'm delighted for all of them. It's a good-ass pit
crew. The last race of the 5 lugs rule. Now we're going to 1 lug, and that's so short. But we're not here to talk about NASCAR.
I love that his accent changed the sentence carried on there. It was just, that was quite funny. Yeah, so like I said, Mexican Grand Prix talk, all of that. In the next main part of the segment, and then of course a little bit about MotoGP and the Algarve as well, where the main news story was a dive bombing South African. You'll have to bear with us on this one. We'll get to the meat and potatoes on that one in a bit.
No, this is not a DTM season finale recap from a few weeks ago.
No.
Oh God.
We're not talking about that dive bombing South African.
But arguably just as bad. More on that in a minute. Basically, you can find us in the meantime. We're on YouTube.com/Motorsport101. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter at Motorsport_101, where people are still sending me hate mail for that last segment on Megan Thee Stallion. Thanks a bunch, everybody. Thanks a bunch.
It's only like 3 dudes.
Yeah, you know, it happens. We're on Patreon.com.
Dudes that have never been inclined to eat pussy in their lives. you can also subscribe to us on patreon.com/motorsport101 and get all sorts of great content for backing the show financially, including early access to all of our episodes. And of course, you can find all of our material, podcasts, videos, written stuff, motorsport101.com.
What RJ said. Thanks for covering me, buddy, while I was trying to put my lung back in my body. Much appreciated.
I know that feeling.
No kidding. I'm about to join you here, Cam. So, as I come back from the medical ring, we'll have RJ talk a little bit about the Mexican Grand Prix.
It's not the Mexican Grand Prix. It's the Mexico City Grand Prix. La Grande Premio de Distrito Federal. This is a critical round of the championship and an early surprising qualifying as Red Bull botched both their qualifying final runs of qualifying. They were so distracted by Yuki Tsunoda taking avoiding action up ahead of him. Valtteri Bottas took pole at a Mercedes 1-2, which was definitely not looking like a prospect going into the weekend. Bottas is the 10th different driver in a row to qualify on pole in Mexico. But the race was essentially won on turn one after Max Verstappen went from third, got alongside both the Mercedes, and overtook them around the outside of turn one to take the early lead. Then behind them, Daniel Ricciardo locked up and spun Bottas around, sending him to the back. Esteban Ocon got pincered by both Yuki Tsunoda and Mick Schumacher. Tsunoda and Schumacher out. Ocon keeps going. They have a safety car. After the safety car comes out, Max Verstappen took the lead and then just dumps the entire vending machine on everybody's chest. He go on to win by 16 seconds. And this was after he backed off a bit to try and screw up Valtteri Bottas' attempt at taking the purple football away. 16 seconds ahead of Lewis Hamilton, who sustained a ton of pressure from Sergio Perez to take third place and become the first ever Mexican driver to finish on the podium in their home Grand Prix. The scenes of that were amazing. Great. Mexico, I see Mexico City, I see you up in the discussion of Best Fans 2021. Folks, Max Verstappen's got a 19-point lead in the championship. Is this over?
Feels over. I don't know if it's actually over. It feels over.
It's a psychological blow.
This was a ferocious ass-whooping. Max Verstappen upgraded from Beatdown 7 Home Premium to Beatdown 7 Ultimate.
This is a boring Max Verstappen win. You never thought you'd see the day.
Yeah, how he got to the lead was anything but boring, though, because
Man,
if Formula E Monaco didn't happen this year, and I still might nominate that as a Scotty, he broke over 30 meters later than Valtteri Bottas, over 20 meters later than Lewis Hamilton. Just supreme confidence in that car on cold tires to hang around the outside there.
On a dusty, oily track where everybody was fucking worried that people were going to go sliding off at the S.A. Moisa Solana, that complex of first three corners. Because I know Fernando Alonso was worried about, like, oh, people are going to run off track and gain an advantage. Oh, there's going to be a pile. Okay, we did have a pile up. And yeah. Perez did run through the grass, but it didn't really gain him an advantage. That was a ferocious beatdown. Nobody could live with Verstappen's pace. Everybody else was just having to fight for scraps.
Yeah, can I just say, first and foremost, that, like, I think it was funny that Fernando Alonso was worried about people cutting the runoff. Like, how ironic is that after what we saw in Russia? Oh, I thought that's quite cute, first and foremost. No, I think if Verstappen goes on to win this championship, which I must admit he's probably now just become overwhelming favourite to do just that, that overtake might be the defining moment of his season. That was astonishing. How many times do you say Lewis Hamilton was outbraked by 20 metres going into a corner? Like,
23.
It's been a hot minute.
23 metres on arguably the greatest race car driver of all time.
And like, you'd assume if someone broke that late, they weren't making the corner.
And he made the corner,
no problem.
Yeah, kept two wheels on track the whole time, was a little bit wide, but perfectly legal pass, no question whatsoever. It was inch perfect. It was a wonderful, supreme bit of driving. And it's something that I want to give credit to Cam to alluding to on Twitter, where I think on the previous episode a couple of weeks ago, where he said he's getting Schumacher at Benetton vibes about Verstappen in this current run of form that he's in. I couldn't argue. When I saw that overtake, I was like, yeah, Cam's onto something here. Because we are witnessing arguably the best racing driver in the world right now at the peak of his powers in a car that is singing to him at the moment. And that was a clobbering. I don't think I've seen anything like that this season, where it was just comprehensively better in every way, shape, or form. And you don't say that about Mercedes very often these days.
Yeah, it's another... We said it back in Austria, where it looked like, for the first time in the hybrid era, Mercedes was simply outgunned, and there was nothing they could do about it. This was the first time since that race where I'd say the Red Bull looked that advantageous over the Merc in the high altitude, not so much on the engine side as was predicted going into this weekend, but just having more downforce in the high altitude. Verstappen had so much more confidence in the car to do what he wanted to do with it. And if Mercedes doesn't win in Brazil, it's out of their hands. There's nothing they can do. It's going to take a screw-up from Verstappen, and Verstappen just keeps rolling with the punches.
Because the way it is, if Hamilton finishes first and Verstappen second, that's a seven-point gain. Brazil is the last time that they'll be able to overtake Verstappen in the points before the final race. If they don't win in Brazil, Hamilton will have to take the points lead. Without any Red Bull screw-ups, he'll have to take the points lead at the final race. It would be real exciting if he does, but if you're Mercedes, you don't want to play that close.
No, not with the fact that we've got a circuit in Brazil where Max and Red Bull typically go very well, and two circuits which are, or three circuits which are an unknown, two which are complete unknowns, and one which is heavily reconfigured.
Yeah, I was going to say, if Verstappen wins in Brazil, even if Hamilton gets fastest lap, it's a 25-point gain, and Verstappen is guaranteed the tiebreaker on a number of race wins, because I think Verstappen has 9 to Hamilton's 5.
Yeah, Lewis would have to run the table to the end of the year to match that countback.
And it also gives Red Bull the range to win a round early, potentially. And that's also big. If they can hold, they might not even need Abu Dhabi to win this title. They can win it in Saudi Arabia, potentially.
Yeah, they could get too. They could get too far ahead by Saudi Arabia, and it's over. And like the only analog to the final three circuits we've gone to this year, well, two of the final three is Bahrain, but that was first race of the season. That's such a long time ago that doesn't even mean that much that Hamilton won that race.
Well, and I'm just thinking back, if we talk about this in terms of a title blow. Turkey, what was it, in a row? We had Monza, we had Sochi, and we had Turkey. Those three races should have been comprehensive walkovers from Lewis, and none of them were. He did win in Sochi, but it was not a walkover by any stretch of the imagination. And it feels like Mercedes can't capitalize when they do have the advantage, because they clearly had the fastest car all three weekends. And Max just isn't leaving points on the table. The only time where this year where you can really say he did of his own accord was probably Bahrain and a overzealous overtake.
Yeah. You look at the rest of the season, there is no fundamental round where I can say Max is solely responsible for this screw-up. Like, the other big blows in his title campaign have been directly at the hands of other people, except maybe Monza, which I think most people would probably deem as a racing incident. Where it's genuinely quite hard to apportion.
Max was perfectly responsible, but so was the other person that he ended up in the gravel with. When we talk about XP, expected points, shout out your man's RJ. The Verstappen just keeps bringing in the points. And when we expect Mercedes to, when they are ahead and they do have track position, they just haven't been. Because I think it paints a very, I think it paints a picture where I think the Red Bull across the year looks a little better than it is. These cars are very close and it's more circuit dependent. Red Bull's just maximizing more. And Max is just like a metronome. He just keeps going.
Yeah, he's not giving Lewis an inch. Like, if he's not got the best car on the day, he's finishing second, and he's mitigating any good day that Mercedes had. It reminds me a lot of when Marc Marquez and Andrea Dovizioso had their title fights in MotoGP. Dovi had those big one-on-one head-to-head wins over Marquez on multiple occasions. He only ever gained 5 points out of it. And when Ducati had a bad day, he was finishing sixth or further down the order. It's a more extreme version of what I've basically seen with Verstappen this year. And he's been virtually flawless pretty much all season long. And it's looking like he's finally starting to break off an advantage in this title race that might be a bit too much for Mercedes to reel in. Hey! There's still possibility of shenanigans, that's why we watch, and look, it wouldn't surprise me.
Reliability. And or crashes, Mercedes has to consider Brazil the match point. They have to win there.
Yeah, I would say that. It's. I think we're now at win or bust territory for Mercedes at this point. They have to pretty much run the table from here, realistically speaking. And it only gets worse. Sorry, RJ, before we move on, RJ, did you say something?
I wanted to start talking about Sergio Perez.
Yes.
At home. Third place, had a chance at second. It got close to within, like, DRS range. Maybe not enough to make a desperation lunge, but not really close enough. But that's huge. One thing, because he finished on the podium at home. And two, because with Valtteri Bottas having just the worst sort of race, there's 1 point in the Constructors' Championship between Mercedes and Red Bull.
You remember when said the Constructors' Championship was probably done? Sergio Perez just sat up out of the coffin. So,
got up like The Undertaker did. Back-to-back podiums for Checo. He's arguably his two strongest drives in a Red Bull since joining the team. Maybe Baku notwithstanding. But, yeah, like, superb in that race again. And you don't see Hamilton ran that close. You'd expect that from the other guy in the Red Bull. But this time it was Perez that was giving Hamilton a headache pretty much all race long.
But the compromise strategy. Because Red Bull kept him out long on purpose so they could try and get in the lead laps. But that should have given Hamilton an overwhelming advantage.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I think...
Okay. I'll hear you out.
I think they tried to... I think they wanted to undercut him, but Lewis was the first one to bail on his initial set of tires. Red Bull had this very small window where they maybe could have jumped him. Because Lewis he came out from his pit stop right up behind Charles, and the dirty air in Mexico was absurd.
Thick.
In this altitude, all that air is that much more valuable. When it comes off of your car following another, it is even stronger.
Yeah, because you could tell during the race, during the last third, where Sergio chased down Hamilton, got within a half second, well, got close to a half second, and hit a wall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lewis came out behind Leclerc. I think they should have pitted Perez then.
Yeah.
And tried to jump him that way. Otherwise, but I think it was very risky, and I think Red Bull didn't want to take the risk when they've got a huge blow to the Mercedes and the constructors anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could have done worse strategy. You could have been Alfa Romeo with Antonio Giovinazzi double your points output in a race where he really needed points, and you get him stuck behind Valtteri Bottas for a whole race.
Oh, well, yeah, a fate worse than death.
Yeah, we're going to look back on it in the season review, but looking back across this year, the amount of bad strategy that has cost Alfa Romeo points, you'd swear it's their parent team that's writing the strategies for them. Because both Kimi and Gio deserve a lot more. But yeah, Perez was superb this weekend.
Superb. He looked great every session. He has three straight podiums. It's amazing. This is what we wanted to see the whole time.
Yeah, and it might be that extra push that gets him the Constructors title, because we all looked at Perez being the elephant in the room back at Sochi when he was 30-odd points behind Valtteri Bottas, and he's completely reined that gap back in towards his, I guess you could say, counterpart in the second Mercedes.
It's 20 points between Bottas and Perez, four races left in the season, and the Constructors' Championship has a point in it.
Yeah.
This ain't
over. It's so close. It's so close that they pitted Valtteri Bottas repeatedly at the end of the race to try and get him some clean air to yank the fastest lap point away from Max.
You are not getting that purple football, Red Bull.
Bottas finished that race two laps down as a result of the damage and the extra pit stops.
Rains for Terry Bottas, it pours.
Oh, poor
on a weekend where he, on a weekend where across the board he was. He looked better than Lewis from practice all the way through to qualifying. Just even when Valtteri has a good weekend, it ends up not going so well.
And then got thrown under the bus for apparently not blocking Max off the start. So, you know, the whole game of let's take individual screenshots of like frame by frame of the start and see precisely where Valtteri could have parked his car to prevent Max's, by the way, as I say it again, otherworldly overtake.
At that start there, no fault of Bottas. There's no way you'd assume that, Max is going to outbreak both of us and make the corner.
Look, Bottas was punished for doing the right thing, backing out in the middle of a three wide. and then he got hit from behind anyway.
Over. Yeah, because you would have, if he didn't back out, it would have been exactly what happened to Esteban Ocon further down the field.
I don't know how Ocon bringing it back finished that race.
Bringing it back to the man in P3. Looked great out on track. Ran Lewis very close. At a track at any other altitude, probably gets that position. But we're in Mexico, so dirty air fest. And then that post-race celebration. With Perez the Elder.
I
was the happiest man on planet Earth in that micro instant.
Having a Grand Prix basically in the middle of a football stadium is great. Like, the Mexican fans were incredible all weekend long. Checo chants that could be heard all over Mexico. And I think they had something like over... I think it was 360,000 over the course of the weekend. Yep. A huge turnout for Mexico City. We were going nuts over America the previous week for 400,000. Mexico almost matched them body for body. Incredible turnout. And we have to mention Sergio Senior. The happiest man in the world. I don't want to know what happens if Perez wins another race in his attendance. He's going to spontaneously combust.
For people who have been watching in the, over the last decade, that's the first podium celebration I've seen like that since Kamui at Japan in 2012.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
People chanting, people carrying, his crew carrying Sergio around the inside of the football stadium, flying a Mexican flag. It was so much fun to see.
It was the one thing in sports that I've seen since the Side Talk Knicks video dropped a few weeks ago that has matched that kind of energy.
Oh,
I'm now the podium now... for Sergio Perez.
Did you ever doubt Sergio Perez?
Don't you regret not keeping him, Otmar? Not quite, given a result later down the field, which we'll get to a little later. But yes, great to see. Huge blow against Mercedes and the constructors. Mm. And sets up... We've got two very close constructors fights separated by a total of 1 point across both of them.
Wow, yeah. Well, on McLaren, it's AlphaTauri and Alpine are now tied as well because of a certain someone that finished in fourth. We'll get to that briefly in a minute as well. But yeah, shout out to Checo's dad. Like, I love that he was high-fiving random people. He was hugging every member of the Red Bull crew he could find. Like, I think he adopted Max in the middle of the celebration, which I think is the most affection Max Verstappen has ever gotten from a father figure in his life.
Oh my God.
That's not wrong.
It was, and they brought back the car lift. I was like, yes, they lifted him up.
Understood the assignment. Hey,
thank you, Dre. I now coughed up a lung laughing from that.
it was awesome. Let's talk about other people that impressed us, because off the podium, after Perez and after Verstappen, there were some other performances that impressed. How about Pierre Gasly in fourth, definitive best of the rest. Lonely, very, very lonely, but 12 points is 12 points. And now they're tied with Alpine, a team that has won a race.
Pierre Gasly has, with that performance, for me, passed Lando for my driver of the year contender.
He's
been relentless.
I can certainly see the argument, because when Gasly is on it, he is on it. Like, we know that McLaren and Ferrari have got way more resources, arguably better driver talent across their two cars, and, you know, bless Yuki Tsunoda, he's just not on that level of the five guys that he's really competing with in that hella tight midfield fight. When Gasly's on it, he runs those dudes over. He's done this like five or six times this season where he's cracked the top six, and he's beaten significantly better machinery in order to do it. He is superb when he's fully dialed in. He really is. And I almost feel bad for his free agency situation, because he's kind of ham-hocked in a B team that is not realistically going to compete against McLaren and Ferrari, but he is single-handedly dragging that AlphaTauri into contention.
An Alpine team that won a race this year. And Pierre has surpassed his point total from last season, despite the fact that he won a race last year. I know we have more races now, but still.
But we've still got four races to go.
Yeah.
And it shows how phenomenal... it shows the job that he's doing, because... As I said before, he is a very different driver to the driver he was 2 years ago in that Red Bull seat. Losing that seat got his ass in gear. It's unfortunate we had to get it to that point. But this year, he has been relentless. And he is putting... I don't know if he's putting the AlphaTauri where it doesn't deserve to be, or that's where it should be and Yuki's underperforming. I think six of one, half a dozen of the other. But Gasly just keeps raking in these points.
Big points. Big chunky points. And another 12 or 4 places enough to scoff at. Can I be a little bit self-indulgent and say Sebastian Vettel?
Go ahead. Aston Martin should never have gotten that close to a top 8 finish all weekend.
I shouldn't be this happy with a finish in 7th.
The floor is yours. Helicopter for our enjoyment.
Yeah, sure. So, no, I'm not doing that. But we've had brighter days this year, thankfully. But look, this Aston Martin car is not great. I think it's probably going to finish 7th out of the.
It's high Q2 at the absolute limit.
Yeah, that's. It seems to be that you might nick into Q3 if you're lucky. Basically, you know, qualified 11th, got a little bit of a promotion due to the amount of engine penalties, but finished. You know, a quiet but very comfortable 7th. So in the 7th best car, that's way above par, so I'll happily take that. Again, I feel sorry it came at Antonio Giovinazzi's expense, who was driving a superb race. But then, I don't know if you guys heard it, but after the race, he literally got on the radio as soon as they crossed the flag and literally said, thanks for the strategy today, guys. Sarcastically, as he crossed the line.
That is a man who knows he is out of that team and is letting them know how bad they fucked him.
So bad.
At least buy him dinner first.
Oh, dear. Maybe Guan Yu Zhou will buy him dinner after that seat inevitably gets confirmed for him in the next couple of weeks or so.
Or Oscar Piastri. Or who is ever behind this door.
What's in the box? Et cetera. But anyone else wanted a shout out, RJ?
Kimi Räikkönen had a good race. This may end up being his last noteworthy result as a Formula One driver. 8th is Alfa Romeo were generally good. I don't know what it is. They've been nowhere, but you just put them in high altitude and somehow they've impressed.
They just keep throwing away points. I'll say Lando Norris fighting back from a power unit penalty. Drove a great race. Ended up in the points, which at this point you have to say, given that updated Ferrari hybrid system, it's looking increasingly like Mercedes or that McLaren Mercedes is losing their grip on third in the constructors. It might be decided on 1 point. That might be a clutch performance.
Could be. Very much so. A good day for some of the midfielders out there that we don't normally praise on the show. So, yeah, sadly, I would say if you're going to go out of your way with Mexico, just watch the YouTube highlights. There's not much to see besides that. It was one of the weaker rounds of the year. Again, I'm not going to get too mad about it because we've only got 4 rounds left of these regulations, and we've been spoiled this year, quite frankly. So, you know, we'll take the odd stinker every once in a while.
Go to Sao Paulo!
Before we get into the MotoGP section real quick as well, there is a follow-up from a story we did on a quite infamous segment of ours from 3 weeks ago in the America special. It's not a good sign when a certain Mr. Ryan Eric King has to call it the Brundle Rule. And I'm just like,
hey,
oh,
I didn't call it that. Other people did.
Everyone else has called it that. And Martin Brundle himself has actually come out and effectively distanced himself from it.
Yeah, he said on Twitter yesterday that he didn't ask for any changes. He said he had no real problem with what had actually happened. But F1 took it upon themselves yesterday to change its policy on grid procedures. The most notable highlight of that was the removal of bodyguards on the grid.
Damn. How are we going to protect Martin Brundle?
I know!
Who's going to think about Martin Brundle's safety?
Look, it's his domain, it's his turf, we have to protect him so he can ask more asinine questions. This has to happen, right? Yeah, I feel like this is a classic case of Formula One looking at that situation and changing the wrong thing. Obviously you can't change Brundle's interview technique or anything of that shit, but the bodyguard wasn't really the problem here.
The bodyguard was the only person that really did like anything wrong. But again, as we discussed, like if you know anything about singer Megan Thee Stallion, you'll know that her entourage may have a legitimate claim to be a little bit hypervigilant.
Exactly. You know? Yes.
For those who don't know, woman who was shot earlier this year. So they're always going to take, they're going to be overprotective because that is their job.
Yeah.
And they have reason to do their job in an overprotective manner. It's just...
Can I just say, though, by the way, while you're thinking of that, that Megan is handling everything so gracefully. Like, she even invited Martin Brundle to a concert recently. That's great.
Yeah.
We have
Megan...
What a woman.
Megan was not the problem, no matter what your point of view is here.
Not.
A little more respect from Brundle's side, a little more respect from the bodyguard side.
But I don't know. I feel rubbed the wrong way because pretty much Brundle's response to this was in a tweet. Quote, for the avoidance of doubt, I don't care who visits the F1 grid. The more the merrier. Talk to me, ignore me, shove, wave, hug, call me names, whatever makes you happy. All I ask is you soak up the atmosphere, enjoy the privilege. I've not asked for any grid protocol changes. Which, I understand the last sentence, but everything before that. That's not what your comments were a couple weeks ago.
No. You've changed your tune. Like, you had a problem with what happened, Joe, during that interview. The man clearly feels he had the divine right to do what he did. And unfortunately, a lot of people agreed with that notion that the man has a divine right to be a jackass.
Yes, girl boss Martin Brundle! we are definitely girl bossing, we are definitely gaslighting, we are most certainly gatekeeping.
And that's my biggest problem.
Yes, queen!
That was the biggest problem I had with all of this. It wasn't so much what the bodyguard did or what Martin Brundle did to a degree. It was the fact that now Formula One has acted rather rashly. People are going to jump on that rather rash action without realizing that taking away bodyguards is going to make the famous people that you want to collaborate with, you want the attention of, and you want people to show up to your Grand Prix to help promote or co-promote or whatever you want to call it with, they're going to be far less likely to turn up to your Grand Prix if they know that their safety might be compromised by their presence being there.
Just look at that clip that's been going around of some of the drivers arriving in Sao Paulo, and they're just like being mugged at all angles.
Yeah, Charles Leclerc was almost buried under an avalanche of fangirls.
You ever seen that scene where Tommy Lee Jones's character, Natural Born Killers, gets his head ripped off at the prison riot?
Yeah. It's like that. It feels like
a totally unnecessary rule, and it feels like most things this year in Formula One. The actual problem here isn't so much what actually happened, and more everyone's response to it on the various medias of the social.
But we race as one, everybody. Please buy into our corporate activism slogan.
We're begging you. See, we're doing marketing now. We even have a new green logo that we, you know, only came in like 7 years late.
The most obvious logo change you could have possibly imagined happened. Love to see it. But
little V6 hybrid engine boy.
We're not ashamed of our literally the most impressive combustion engines on the planet.
But it doesn't sound like a V12.
Like, why does this sport go out of its way to frustrate us so easily? It's just like, it's infuriating.
You want to talk to Matt less frustrating? Let's talk about MotoGP. That's going to leave us less frustrated because we did it. We raised the age limit and we've cut down motorcycle racing fatalities by 500%. We've cut down the accident by 1,000%. It's over. Motorcycle accidents.
RJ, if this was a Discord call, I would disconnect you right now.
I was going to say, about that, let's talk about the Algarve situation. A relatively tame affair as MotoGP headed back to Portimao for the second time this season. We're not really going to talk about the MotoGP race this time around because there wasn't an awful lot to take away from it. Francisco Bagnaia took his fifth straight pole position of the year, and he would win a Lights the Flag victory in pretty comfortable fashion. The only man in his postcode was Joan Mir. Yes, that Joan Mir, having his best result of the year in second place, with Jack Miller on the podium in third. It was a relatively tame race, not an awful lot of action, unfortunately. But it did end two laps early, so we got out of town a little bit early because there was quite a nasty crash with two laps to go between Miguel Oliveira and Michael Lacroix at the top of the hill. Miggy's left leg getting caught between two crashing bikes. Lacroix went for a big dive bomb at the top of the hill, tucked the front, binned his bike, and Miguel got collected for the second straight year by a guy on the same bike as him. I don't know, like,
Big
what God
Mans, get him.
Like, I don't know what God Miggy pissed off in a previous life to keep getting taken out by his own, his own comrades on the same machine. But here we are. But with Fabio Quartararo also having his first DNF of the year, he crashed late on in that with about seven laps to go. Congrats to Ducati, manufacturers champions for the second year in a row. It's a weird timeline where we're saying that Ducati, once again, are the best all-rounders in the field. How did that happen? Anyway.
The jack of all trades and the master of only one.
Yeah, and yet, manufacturers champions undisputed 2 years running. MotoGP, everybody. Our focus is going to be on Moto3. First and foremost, congratulations to Pedro Acosta, everybody. The 17-year-old became the first rookie champion in the lightweight class since Loris Caporossi back in 1990. 31 years since a rookie Loris won the lightweight title.
Old when he walked away.
But Dre, I thought
the problem with these classes and this small bike racing was all the under-18s riding them.
Yeah, we have to get the kids out of these cages. I mean, we have to get the kids off the motorcycles.
Yeah. We say as a 17-year-old rookie world champion is out here reeling in his golden helmet. I love they even joked about it because if he saw his title celebration, he wore an orange bib, which is normally to signify a rookie rider. Nice touch. Very, very good.
We knew we were about to see something special. But Dre, it probably could have been closer if not for...
Oh my god.
Dive bomb Darren is back, everybody. I know you missed it, didn't you? Darren Binder on the final lap of that race got his braking point completely wrong for turn three at the bottom of the hill, plowed into the side of Dennis Foggia and Sergio Garcia's bikes, took them both out of the race, and with Foggia crashing, that ended the championship pretty much right there and then. As Acosta would basically win in open air for the final lap of that race. It was a victory lap for Acosta in the end, and Foggia, understandably, apocalyptically angry that his championship, and let's not forget he was running a bike length behind Acosta, knowing that if Acosta won, it was title over. It was literally do or die for Foggia, and Darren Binder ripped it out of his hands. Leopard Race and his team literally went on the record and said, Darren Binder threw our entire season away. On the record, in a public statement.
Yeah, it's still up there. If you want to go read it, you can.
And Stephen A. Smith's NBA Clunt Dune tweet.
Yeah.
And after the race, I mean, Darren went to go apologize and was thrown out of the garage, was physically barred access to their garage.
Yeah, get out. Binder was disqualified for that dive bomb, by the way. It's worth pointing out. So it looks like the stewards have listened. They are seemingly starting to throw out harsher punishments. So Binder was going to finish that race in fourth. He was disqualified. So he was removed from the result outright. It also got some of the MotoGP guys talking about this, because there was a big press conference at the end of the MotoGP race, and it turned into a big old open discussion between Bagnaia, Morbidelli, Valentino Rossi, about what to do about some of these younger riders. And Bagnaia, who's also a big F1 fan, talked about, what if we had a super license? Like, and this is the quote he came out with, said, I think that like in the car championship, we need a super license. Just if you are doing something good in your championship, you can move to the next level. And today what we saw is normality, because we've seen a lot of crashes like this from him, in a direct reference to Darren Binder, may I add. This is, like, Binder has accelerated all this conversation. So I know it's not correct to say it, about another rider, but this year he will be with us in MotoGP, and I hope that incident will not happen, but it's something they have to think on, I think. Valentino Rossi also chimed in saying, quote, "I don't know for the super license, but I think we have some riders, like for example Binder, who are always very, very, very aggressive, and sometimes they make some mistakes like this and it's not fair on the others. But this is rider by rider, so for the super license, I don't know sincerely." So, I thought, like I know King first brought it up to our attention on Monday morning, as he described it as spicy, and I was like, this is spicy, like, they just threw Binder completely under the bus for the entire weekend.
Deservingly so.
Yeah, and so, fellas, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Do you think a super license system in MotoGP, could it work? Is it feasible?
Oh, yes, because they have full and total control of their ladder. There aren't any outside championships besides,
well, not really.
Not really. Like, World Superbike's under Dorna's control as well. There's, like, exactly. There's no outside variables.
I would say they're all under the FIM, so, yeah, they could control the whole system across every series and adjust it. If the initial balance isn't right of what you get for a given series, they can always change it. They control every series. At least outside of America, but no one cares about American Superbike right now.
Yeah, fortunately.
It's feasible. Would it fix the problem? I don't necessarily think so.
I think it would, because it would restrict who teams could sign.
See, I've given this a lot of thought, and my thought is that when it comes to talent selection, the sport naturally kind of ends up shaking it out anyway, in that sense. Like, Darren Binder going up two classes to MotoGP next year is, like, the most egregious potential talent doesn't reflect the team he's joining sort of situation we've had recently. For it was Frankie Morbidelli who made an interesting point regarding this in that same press conference, where he said, look, if we had this sort of system, Fabio Quartararo would probably never have made it, or at least wouldn't have made it straight away, because his junior series results were not good, and Petronas took a punt on him when he was in Moto2. He had one career win in Grand Prix to that date, took a punt on him, and it turned out he ended up being an incredible rider, and obviously our new world champion. I don't think teams at the highest level swing and miss all that often. In all honesty, I think, generally speaking, the ladder...
Not to this degree.
But the thing is, even when you look at Fabio's junior record, it's not nearly as bad as Binder.
Sure,
being 10th in Moto2 is pretty far off the pace, but I'm pretty sure there are ways to allow a Fabio to come up from Moto2 while avoiding someone 7th in Moto3 from moving straight to the top class.
Yeah.
I would depend on how you stagger how the points are achieved, which again, FIM could directly influence, because they hold control over all of the classes globally.
Because, like, again, the only other recent example we've had this is Jack Miller. Jack Miller was runner-up in Moto3 in 2014. He lost out to Alex Marquez. He did the double jump and skipped Moto2 entirely. And for or against, I'm not entirely sure. Of course, Miller is now one of the best bike riders in the world, no doubt about that. On the other end of the coin, it took him 5 years in MotoGP to really get to that point. And when his career in the top flight first started, he was criticised by a lot of people. He had to be pulled aside by Mike Webber, who's the head of race direction, and said, look, Jack, get it together. Because he took out Hector Barber at Assen that weekend, and it didn't go down well, and people were bitching about
it.
That was
an atrocious incident.
Yeah, it was. He almost completely spiked Hector Barber's leg. It could have been very, very nasty, potentially. So, look, I generally think that this is not as big a problem as Bagnaia is making out. I think this is kind of a freak instance as well, because Maverick Viñales getting sacked from Yamaha when he did kind of screwed everything up for Yamaha in that sense, because they were going to... Like, Petronas was leaving the sport. You know, they were losing... They weren't sure if they were going to have Yamaha back in into going into the season. It turns out they will, because they now own, like, the RA, like, Razlan Rati owns the team now, the RAF team. They had to dig up talent on that was already on their books, because a lot of the big names that are in Moto 2 last year were already taken. You know, because Raul Fernandez is going up next year. Remy Gardner is moving up next year. Aaron Canet was already confirmed at Pons. Fabio Di Giantonio was already confirmed to be going up early on in the season. So, like, Marco Bezzecchi, not confirmed, but pretty much nailed on, is going to be riding for Valentino Rossi's team next year. So, they were never going to get a top-tier dude available. However, was Darren Binder really the best guy you could have gotten?
Oh.
Like...
No, because Darren Binder, I have said it before, I will say it again until he proves to me otherwise. He is a danger to himself and others on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
He is... How old?
How old? 23. 23.
He's 23. Remember, the problem is the under-18s on these bikes, right, Dorna? It's not the 23-year-old who has consistently been completely incapable of risk assessment for his entire career.
When it comes
down to...
And now
he's going to be on the full-fat MotoGP bikes.
Yeah, when it comes down to something like this, I'd rather have a super license point system other than age limits. Have you limited by merit, not age, which is wholly arbitrary.
Right.
Yeah.
That's entirely fair. Like, Jake Dixon was right there. Like, far more experienced on bigger machinery. Had a prestigious career in BSB, which is a solid superbike series in its own right.
And the thing is, Darren is... Darren is fast on his day.
Sure.
And they've got to be thinking that they can somehow harness this. But geez, the amount of incidents that he's had, and it's
multiple.
Not just the amount, it's the way he has them. Where it's like he just switches on public lobby mode on insert racing game here. And that move on Sunday was never, not in a million years, going to work. And the second everyone started breaking for the corner, you could see it coming. That he was firing into a disappearing gap.
He was never going to make that corner in a month of Sundays. And there is a reason why the paddock has called him Dive Bomb Darren. That's not... like, if you've got a nickname in a MotoGP paddock, that's normally not a good thing. And yeah, I am not for Darren Binder going to MotoGP. I think a super license is a bit of an exaggerated solution to the problem, because I don't think it's as big a problem as some are making out. But I could certainly see why you might want to safeguard the bigger classes based on merit. Thankfully, I'd say most of the time in GP, it solves itself.
Well, I think one point that is important about, you know, potential super license system is looking at the FIA system. And one thing that people forget is that if you compete in a championship officially sanctioned by the FIA and you finish the season without any penalty points, you actually get bonus super license points. Like, the system's designed to encourage people to drive safely.
Yeah, it's not just built around results, but how you achieve those results and the drive, the racecraft that you display while you're getting them. In Darren Binder's case, a complete and utter lack of racecraft.
Yeah.
There is some insight that we have. The team felt like they owed Binder. He had a contract with Petronas, and they've already breached a contract with John McPhee when they owed him a Moto 2 ride, and that didn't
happen. Yeah, exactly. Like, their word is not worth anything because they basically dicked around John McPhee earlier on in his career as it is. So, like that word is barely worth the piece of paper it's printed on, quite frankly. So, it's a bit of a messy one. I can understand why they felt they owed Binder something and they thought he was the most talented guy on the books.
They got the Marquez brothers, they got the Espargaro brothers. We can have brothers too, goddammit.
I'm not sure we're keen on the Binder ones as much. We like Brad. Brad is great. Darren, just before we get out of town,
the talent landed all on one side of that equation.
Yeah, safe to say. Good luck, Darren. You're gonna need it. Before we get out of here as well, I just want to say as well, best wishes to Marc Marquez. Jesus, we already knew he was missing this race due to concussion that he had received in a dirt bike accident he'd had training for the race in Portimao. Turns out it was worse than we feared, because this man cannot catch a clean bill of health to save his life. He has had a recurrence of the nerve damage in his eye that he suffered in 2011. For those guys who don't know, he suffered it in a freak accident at Sepang that year. I think it was a clash he had with Bradley Smith in a Moto2 race. Sadly, that weekend was overshadowed by something far more grim, unfortunately, in GP motorcycling history at that time around. But it did effectively cost him a run at that 2011 Moto2 title, because he had to miss the final two rounds. He had to have corrective surgery on that nerve to ensure that he wasn't suffering from double vision. That's come back. And he will definitely miss the final round at Valencia this weekend. And he will also miss the Jerez test directly after that. So Marquez's future is unclear going forward. And I think Cammy worked it out. Four of the last five off seasons, he's gone into them not 100%.
Quite far from 100% in pretty much all of them. It's not good. And I believe the specifics of this one, I have them here from his doctor, are diplopia, double vision, and a paralysis of the fourth right nerve with involvement of the right superior oblique muscle. Basically, he can't move. I believe it's his right eye. He can't rotate that eyeball right now. Which is not ideal when you're riding a motorcycle.
No.
I myself many years ago landed on my head in a dirt bike incident. I can tell you, first of all, it explains a lot, but I can say it's not very fun.
No.
And hopefully Mark can recover from this as he did about a decade ago. It comes at a bad time for Honda when you've got a completely revised bike coming to the Jerez test, rear fender to front fender, completely brand new bike, going into next year. We know who it's built for, because we know he is the anchor of the Honda team, for better and for worse. And he's not going to be there to give his opinion on it.
Not straight away, anyway. We'll have to wait and see what happens. No. So there's a second test. There'll be a test, obviously, early February next year, probably at Sepang, depends on their COVID situation going into 2022. Yeah,
it's going to be a question of time, and hopefully, as it did before, might need surgery, but hopefully it can correct itself and he can get back on the bike, because I can tell you right now, no one with a concussion should be riding a motorcycle.
No, absolutely friggin' not. And unfortunately, this sport has not been 100% on that at all in recent times. So I'm glad that Repsol Honda did the right thing last week by pulling him from Portimao in the first place, especially now we know it was actually far worse than just a concussion. So, yeah, again, fingers crossed to Mark and all the best. Hopefully it's not as serious as feared. Next week, we got another doubleheader. We have Formula One over in Sao Paulo, Brazil, for the Brazilian Grand Prix. Potentially, we think here, it's probably match point for Mercedes. So prepare for Hamilton's last stand in the land of his hero, potentially.
Don't say that. Last time that happened, shit got bad real quick.
Oh boy. We'll have to wait and see how that goes. As well as MotoGP's season finale at Valencia. And I suspect, just a touch, that one man will dominate proceedings. There'll be the final race of Mr. Valentino Rossi. It really will be the last dance. And tell me
with a straight face, you foresaw years ago that we'd have Casey Stoner and Valentino Rossi hanging out together willingly in the same garage.
arm, it feels like a part of my childhood soul has moved on now that I've seen the two of them arm. We can achieve anything. Stoner and Rossi arm in arm. I hope, because this week is right, Stoner's going to be on BT Sports coverage this weekend in the UK. So I'm actually looking forward to, I hope they interview him on that, because I was like, I want to know about that picture, because I've never seen those two arm in arm smiling. And Duffy was there in another picture as well, so a lot of history between those three right there. And fun fact, that race will be on November the 14th. The date, 14, 11, 21. Combined, that makes 46. The final race of Valentino Rossi's career. We'll talk about that on next week's show. Oh, a quick shout out to our friend as well. Lewis has just mentioned in the chat as well. Danny and Jorge will be down there as well. So we're probably going to get all sorts of tribute content over the weekend, which is bound to be fun. We'll talk about all of that and more on Motorsport 101 this time next week. But just before we get out of here, basically you can find us one more time. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. Facebook.com/Motorsport101. Twitter @Motorsport_101. Our personal handles on the screen. If you're listening in via audio, @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, @RyanEricKing, and @CBuckley917. If you'll follow us on Instagram, @Motorsport101Pod, for a bonus content over there as well. And you can find everything on what we do on our website, Motorsport101, including that Patreon page where you can back us financially on there. $5 for ready access to all the audio episodes, $10 for the video versions, and be able to listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. We'll be back for a doubleheader in Brazil and Valencia next week. But until then, I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, Ryan Eric King, and Cam Buckley. Until next time, sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
Why does the sun keep setting at 5 o'clock now?
Don't question it.